everyone. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. We are happy to be here. My name is Juan, here with Kevin.
Hello.
And we like movies. Tonight, or today, whatever time of your day you're listening to us, we are going to be diving into another one of our film reviews. This was my choice. But before we get into any of that, just want to ask you to follow us on other platforms, subscribe, comment, add us, like us, whether it's on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, I'm not sure where else. Yeah, and share. If there's an episode that you like, definitely share that. Help us to grow our audience and to get more people to hear what it is that we're doing. What else? Also, yeah, check out our website if you want to go back and look at all of the films that we've reviewed and also every rating that each of us has assigned to all the movies that we've reviewed. This is season 2, episode, I believe this will be episode 23 of season 2. Still going strong. We're down a man, hopefully Mark will return and join us at some point. I was thinking about in The Last Dance when Scottie Pippen held up his Jordan shoe and he did the, you know, come on back. I was thinking of doing that. I don't know what it would be for Mark. Maybe a box of cornflakes or something. I'll be eating a bowl of cornflakes. But anything you want to say to the people, to the audience, to our fans, Kevin?
No, just glad you're listening. If you want to give us any feedback, go ahead and just hit us up on that Instagram or the Twitter. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. Let us know if you have any suggestions for movies that you think we can just riff on. That's it.
Yep. That is good. That is good. I'm glad that you said that. All right. Tonight's feature film discussion. Again, as I mentioned, it was my choice. I was on the fence between two films. Ultimately, chose this one, and it is Avatar: The Way of Water. Let me see here. If you have been living under a rock, then you probably are unaware that this is directed by James Cameron, also written by James Cameron, Rick Jaffa, and Amanda Silver. It stars Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Sigourney Weaver, Stephen Lang returns in his nemesis role. Kate Winslet is in this. Cliff Curtis, Eddie Falco. Oh yeah, I remember her. She was just a normal human being. Jermaine Clement, also a normal human being in this. And those appear to be the most notable cast members. What other information do I have for you here? Rated PG-13. Do we have any of the $350 million budget so far has a worldwide gross of just about $2.3 billion.
Has a runtime of 192 minutes,
3 hours and 12 minutes. Again, 2.3 billion is a nice chunk of change. Let's see here what we have for this on Rotten Tomatoes. 76% critics, 92% audience. So that is some info for you about the movie. Production companies 20th Century Studios, TSG Entertainment, and Lightstorm Entertainment, released on December 16th, 2022 in the United States. And let me give you a brief synopsis of the film for those who have not seen it. Jake Sully lives with his newfound family formed on the extrasolar moon Pandora. Once a familiar threat returns to finish what was previously started, Jake must work with Neytiri and the army of the Navi race to protect their home. So again, this was my pick. Some background here is that at one time I was vehemently against this movie. And there's a lot, I guess, of background information to that, but ultimately it just came with me feeling like the first one didn't really hold up very well, aside from maybe some visuals. It had a gigantic impact when the first one came out, but outside of that, it just became a movie that I was kind of repelled by, even whenever it was on TV or anything like that. The story just seemed so lame, and it just felt like there was nothing there outside of what at the time of its release was a momentous achievement visually, but nothing else. And so actually I think that kind of left a sour taste in my mouth. So going into this one, again, from everything that I kind of had heard or seen from James Cameron leading up to this, really had no expectations that this would be any different. But with the release of it on HBO Max, was kind of like, all right, maybe I'll see what all the hype was about. So that's how this became my choice. After having seen it, again, I did kind of fall asleep a little bit there at one part. It was long. My initial reaction is just that, again, very pretty to look at, but not much else there at all. And I'll kind of leave it at that at this point. Any thoughts you want to share, Kevin?
Yeah. So I saw this in theaters, by the way, with my kids, and I rewatched it.
Fancy you.
Hey, it wasn't cheap because we did the 3D and everything, but I saw it in theater, and James Cameron, like, even when I was rewatching it, it did capture me more on the big screen than it did on my TV. He's a director that, like, this movie reminded me a lot of, like, older type of movies, like Cecil B. DeMille's, The Ten Commandments, even Steven Spielberg in Jurassic Park. Not necessarily story-wise, but, like, his world, James Cameron's world building, especially in the first Avatar and this Avatar, I thought was amazing. It seems like he created a world that these characters were actually exploring, as opposed to they were just existing in it. Like, I love Marvel movies, but the world around them didn't matter. It was just about the characters. And in this one, the characters are okay. Like, I feel they're going to develop. There's like three more sequels on the way. But I thought the world was what really sold, like, this Avatar, especially in the theater. Like, when they were going underwater, discovering, you know, the whales, discovering all these new worlds, these new, like, ecosystems in the world. And the story itself was, well, it was okay. It wasn't the great, like, it's not any twists or turns. He didn't break any new ground in storytelling, but I think he told the story well that they wrote. And I think movie making wise, like, it definitely reminded me of older type of movies where it was just a grand scale and you populated it with a simple story. And I liked it. I don't know if that made sense to you.
It does, yeah, it does make sense. I mean, I was trying to process that. I think there definitely is some validity to what you're describing as far as world building. I mean, I think you can present, the whole it's a Disney, right? Magic Kingdom that they made Pandora.
Oh, Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom, right? So the fact that they even created this extension of this theme park that is Pandora, just like Universal did for Harry Potter, pretty much tells you everything you need to know about yeah, maybe his talent for world building. I'm not a fan of the Navi. I like the world that they exist in, but I'm not a huge fan of that species. Maybe except for
I think
kind
the
of like,
water.
well, I like their reverence for like nature and their respect for nature. I like that aspect of them, but kind of, and the way that they, can attach like to these beings and to this world and really kind of have this nature about them that's more evidently tied to the world that they live in. But I find them to the naked eye, I find them physically unappealing. I don't enjoy like looking at them, I guess.
You're not attracted to them.
They're like they're long, they're lanky, they're blue, they have weird hair, weird eyes. They're just like not attract, yeah, like they're, not in a sexual way, in a purely sort of like aesthetic way. They're not, attractive. They're not like what do you call different examples.
Sound like a white man in the 20s, bro. That's a joke, everybody. It's a joke.
Nah, but like for example, what were the little critters from the 80s? I can't, what's the little movie
What? Ewoks?
with Giz? No, well, there's
Oh, the
Ewoks
Gremlins.
is a good example, but like Gremlins, like they were
The
cute,
Mogwai.
like my, yeah, even Predator, right? He's like cool looking. They have something that like
You liked his body. You liked the Predator's body because he wasn't a face. He was a butterface.
there's something that appeals, that attracts, that the I don't get anything like that from the Navi. They're just weird looking. So that's strange. I think my biggest problem with this movie, outside of just the sort of, I found the story boring. I found the movie generally pretty boring, so much so that I fell asleep. But I, and part of that was because it was unnecessarily long. And I think it's probably because they know, okay, our strength of our film and our story and what we're really trying to do here is this world. So we need to spend as much time giving these visuals and these colors and giving as much of this as possible. But at times, it was just so obvious that they're just feeling themselves, go ahead, cut me off.
I was saying about the length. I will say this one thing. For a movie called Way of the Water, it took them about almost an hour to actually get to the water.
Well, that, and
Like
then like there's one scene in, there's other several examples, but the one that stuck in my mind most of all, and I love whales, right? So I it was pretty cool seeing those creatures. I don't remember what they were called, but like I think it was when one of them first, oh, when it was his son, right? His son, the one that doesn't die.
Spoiler alert.
spoiler alert. But he
The
like connects.
younger son, yeah.
Yeah, like when he connects with that whale, dude, that scene was way too long, man. And they're just like showing you, and like there's music, and it's, montage of this. Like it didn't need to be that long. It was just like so self-absorbed, and just overly indulgent that it at that point it's like really sacrificing the story and the narrative to just kind of go off on these tangents and these visual trails, just allowing you to kind of like bask in it. But maybe it is, maybe you're right? Maybe because I watched it at home that it just didn't capture me that much,
No, that's what I was saying. Like those scenes were phenomenal. Like when I rewatched it, I'm like, okay, it was a little bit long, but when I watched it in 3D and like I was watching it, even when I looked at the girls and they were just like enthralled by like all five of them, even the little ones, they were just enthralled with watching it with the music and everything. It emotionally like put you in a place, to feel for them. And even that whale who was hurt, you're like, all right, I feel for him. Watching it at home, it was just, I'm like, all right, we can move on now.
But you see, there's just something about that, even as you're describing it, that to me is not necessarily synonymous with the things that I enjoy and appreciate about a really good movie, really good storytelling, really good cinema, where it's, where everything is very intentional. There are no wasted seconds or reels or frames. If you're doing something, it ought to be really purposeful and meaningful. Again, maybe it's just me, but to me it
No,
just
and
felt overly self-indulgent.
and I agree with you. And I do think like with James Cameron and a lot of directors, like this movie is meant for the big screen. It's not meant for the little screen. You know what I mean? So I do believe it was all done with intention. And again, if it ever comes out and you ever do end up catching it on the big screen, maybe you'll have a different experience saying, okay, now I understand. But I think it was meant for the big screen. They don't think about, oh, how's it going to play on streaming? I mean, because they're older type of movies. Like when I watch the Ten Commandments nowadays, it's okay. You know what I mean? I've had a chance to see it on the big screen, and it does have more of an impact on the big screen as opposed to just watching it on the small screen. You're like, okay, this is okay. Same thing when I saw Jurassic Park in theater, and I still love it. My girls have seen Jurassic Park, but seeing those dinosaurs big and bold, just it has a different impact than if we're just watching it on streamers now. And I think also, I think you said it too. I think Andres, our friend Andres, made that point. I'm like, even visually, like it's more impactful, more bright. I guess like the resolution, like in theaters as opposed to on a streamer.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it almost for me like makes me sort of even question kind of like what because it's just
Careful.
such a it's just such a different experience, Like there's other mediums that you can go to then to and still have a similar experience visually. So it almost seems like this is not uniquely a cinematic for the film qualities I think that we expect from a film. This necessarily like it kind of, it has those to kind of still meet that standard, but really it's more of just like a colorful canvas to me, because even I think if I saw it in the theater, I might be more immersed and kind of appreciative of the beauty of it, but I think I would still be bored by the story.
Yeah. Which is fair enough. Like I said, I think the story itself was okay. You know what I mean? We did have the twist and like, with one of the sons dying, and, you know, with the human boy and all that stuff. But like I said, it is a groundbreaking story. But, you know, so I can see why you would feel that way, but it might have a little more impact because you were more immersed. Man, that's not easy to
Well, but let's talk
say.
about the conflict of the film,
Oh,
which is, you know, where all the drama is supposed to come from. And the conflict of the film to me felt it felt light in a way, because if I remember correctly, the only true conflict was from a personal vendetta, right? It was just from the, again, the returning nemesis, Quaritch, kind of name is that? From him. So I do have some questions, but it was just him wanting to eventually retaliate, you know, and get his revenge on Jake.
wasn't just him, and this is why I will agree with you on the conflict. The conflict was the humans wanted to, you know, they wanted to keep mining this planet, but they had to stop Jake Sully. They didn't care about the rest of Na'vi. Jake was the one who kept leading them to beat them. So, what is it? Quaritch, he died in one of those battles, and then his avatar came online, and then they're trying to stop him because he's like the brains, because you don't hear about them fighting the tree people anymore afterwards because they can't really put up a fight. They don't have the military tactic. So, and even when they decide to leave, like, I gotta leave because they're gonna keep coming for me. So it did seem like it wasn't the Na'vi people who were the issue. It was just Jake Sully. So it was all the humans versus Jake's family, and most notably Jake.
Yeah, so Jake ho goes to hide with this seafaring tribe. And him and his family, and again, they, you know, Quaritch is on the search of pretty much a path of destruction to not only find Jake, but then he changes his ta tactic to lure Jake out because they can't get him, they can't find him. So then the big sort of centerpiece battle is, you know, with these whales and with these sort of like third party hunters who hunt the whales because they have this liquid that basically it doesn't even reverse aging, right? It like stopped aging or something like that.
Yeah, it was a liquid around their hearts or something.
Yeah, so I think it was the fact that it pretty much came down to just Quaritch versus Jake was a little weird to me, and of course there was more to it, but essentially that was just the conflict. So yeah, that I felt lacked some weight and gravity. But so in the first movie, you had like human beings that basically got plugged into ha to have their
Conscious
consciousness
put it.
put into the body of an a Na'vi.
They're Na'vi avatars.
But in this one, we see Quaritch died, and they just like made an AI version of him that they then uploaded into a Na'vi. Right.
Well, not like they downloaded his brain patterns and everything before he died, and then they
I mean,
uploaded it into
it's an
the.
AI. It's a replica. It's an exact replica of him.
But like what I like what they did is like it's been 13 years since the first one, and it was about what, like 13 or 16 years between the humans coming leaving and coming back.
Okay. I
So
mean,
no, so like they could have made advances on what they did with it, that, you know, with the Na'vi avatars.
sure. But so is Jake dead or is his body somewhere? Just, you know.
I think his body's dead. I can't remember the first one, but I want to believe that that got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And he just decided, because, yeah, because they couldn't, I don't think you can live, yeah, like, no one's keeping anything up. But they didn't show his body, so I want to believe that it got destroyed and he has to stay as a Na'vi the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he is a Na'vi now.
Yeah, which he chose to be anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like Sigourney Weaver, I guess, her, like, in this one, like, her character had died, but she was still able to get pregnant and gave birth to the super baby.
Yeah. So there was that baby, but then Quaritch also had a son.
Yes. Right? Spider. Yeah.
Spider, who got kind of, like, left behind.
Yeah, because he was too young for the cryo chambers.
Yeah.
So the humans that stayed behind on Pandora were raising him.
Yeah, and he was interesting character because he sort of had this conflict, right, of feeling a sort of connection that sort of manipulated him to have some form of loyalty to his dad to a certain degree as he was just navigating and figuring out that dynamic and that relationship. But then eventually, you know, sees the horrible things that they're doing and, you know, returns his loyalty to the Na'vi that have raised them.
I think what I liked about the spider dynamic was that why Jake accepted him. What was her name? Neytiri. Like, she would never accept him. She's like, no, he belongs with his people.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't accept him, even to the point where she's like a son for a son and she was going to kill him. Mm-hmm. And I do like, even though Quaritch was like a bad guy, like he let the kid go because he's like, he didn't want anything to happen to Spider.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that those were actually nice little nuances that I enjoyed. Like I said, there weren't that many nuanced things, but I did like that. And even when Jake said a son for a son, and you could tell he's going to accept him, but it's not going to sit well with his wife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he saved his dad.
Yeah. Well, saved who?
He saved Quaritch.
Only.
Is that part of the part you fell asleep at?
No, I think I remember him saving him, but I mean, he died anyway.
No, he didn't. Like, at the very end, like, when it was all going down, Jake went to go save.
Yeah.
Spider pulled him off. He put him on the rock, and then he swam off.
Which, that was kind of a frustrating moment. I mean, like, you understand. I mean, you can understand it, but it was like, that guy, you just needed to let him die.
Yeah. But that's why, like, the only one who could have was, even though he realized he did something bad, it's still my dad. You know, he still had feelings for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably going to play going forward, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I think, I don't know if you heard, but I thought I heard that that movie has been, the next one's been delayed to 2025 now.
Yeah, there are so many. Like, I think the last one comes out 2029 or 2029 or 2030.
Yeah.
So basically, if you were born on the day the first Avatar came out, you could legally drink by the time the fifth one comes out.
Yeah. That's what I read. One thing that I was definitely impressed with, I mean, at one point, I mean, the Na'vi looked so realistic that it looked like makeup. And I mean, it was like really hard to tell if it was CGI or like if they were just like in makeup. So that was actually really impressive.
Yeah, it did come, because even though, like you said, like the first one was like revolutionary for a time, if you go back, you could tell that they're CGI.
Yeah.
But this one was really like the Na'vi, the whales, like everything on it. Like I just felt was, like I said, it's come a long way in 13 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was to a level, I think, where it's even seems like more advanced even than where we're at now, right? It's like pushing the envelope again.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then that's what, There's something that you gripe about. That's why there's no excuse to watch a movie and see crappy, rubbery CGI all over the place.
Well, not every movie has a, 200 and something million dollar budget.
But it only has that
Three
because it, the whole movie is CGI. You know what I mean?
350 million.
You know what I mean? Like the whole movie CGI. Like if you're doing a CGI spot, you could put some work into it.
What are your thoughts on Sam Worthington in the lead role?
He's okay. Like, how do I put this? You could replace him with another actor and it wouldn't miss a beat, probably. I do like some of the stuff that he brought about more when it dealt with the kids, and I don't know if that was his acting or maybe just me being a father watching this one. But it's nothing fantastic, you know what I mean? And it may be just because I don't know what's happened to Sam Worthington in the time between Avatar and Avatar 2.
He's been acting a lot. I mean, the
Yeah, but
not a lot of like big huge movies, but he's been acting. He's been
yeah,
busy.
and I'm not saying he hasn't. I'm just saying I haven't really been catching much of the stuff. You know what I mean? So, and I don't think he is a bad. It's a serviceable job, but I don't think the role requires that much. If that makes sense. I don't know if it would be different in another actor's hands. It might just be the same because you're just delivering. We're delivering. It's sort of a criticism that I heard about Titanic, right? Which is also another James Cameron movie. Where, all right, you like Leo, Leo's really good, but it's not the most complex, there's not nuances or ticks with it. Most young actors could probably play that role at the
Could
time.
you com could you compare it to an Andy Serkis role?
Like I
Because
don't
that guy
think
is the
so.
Marlon Brando of CGI.
Yeah, because I'm saying like he's playing characters that are pushed and stretched, you know what I mean? Like playing Gollum and playing like even King Kong is a lot requires a lot more from you than playing Jake Sully as a Na'vi, if that makes sense.
Times felt a little bit emotionally limited. And so I think that while I think Sam Worthington is a fine actor, I think this film and this role could be better served by an actor that has a little bit more range. There were times where I just felt like, the line or the scene was calling for a greater level of emotion, and it felt like he couldn't quite reach it all the way. That's at least that's just the impression that I got. So again, maybe it's unfair to throw that criticism at Sam Worthington, but the reality is that when Avatar came out, he was practically an unknown. He had done I think the Terminator movie Salvation might have come out before Avatar. I'm pretty sure it did. So he was in that. That was a pretty big movie at the time. But he was still, by the time Avatar came out, he's still relatively an unknown to be featured in such a huge movie. Then not only to be featured in such a huge movie, but then to kind of have he and that movie franchise tied together for, the next four or five or six films, whatever it ends up being, seems like, I don't know, to me, I think there are actors with a little bit or a lot, maybe more range that I think I would enjoy more in that performance, in that role.
Well, yeah, a couple of things on that. First, Terminator Salvation came out 7 months before Avatar.
Yeah, that's pretty
So
close.
they were basically the same time. But It could be because, and again, we don't know what direction he was given by James Cameron.
Right.
You know what I mean? I know Leonardo DiCaprio did say on Titanic that he did want to do more, push the emotion a little bit more, but he was told, no, pull it back. Oh, I don't want you to do that. This is what I want.
Even with that, though, even with that, I don't know about you. Maybe that's your experience, but I don't watch Titanic and go and feel what I felt with Sam Worthington in this. I mean, I think.
Yeah. No, I don't. Of course.
Yeah, I think Leonardo DiCaprio is a better actor than that, as we've seen with roles after that. But I think he did everything that he needed to do perfectly in that movie.
But the reason I brought that up was, it could have been James Cameron, and this is just me, again, not being a part of that room or that conversation. It's Jake Sully is a Marine. He's a military person. Now he's a Navi, and he's being a father. But maybe he's like, hey, show me some emotion, but pull it back because, you know, you're a trained military person. Like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Because I feel like if you're an actor, you can't emote more than what he was doing in this. You know what I mean? But well, I just feel,
because
I think that's the problem when you have such a strong director, like, and this is what they want. They want you to give them what they want. They're not necessarily in a collaborative spirit. They're like, all right, you're a good actor. Give me this. This is what I want.
Well, and that's where, so there's several other interesting angles here. I've thought about what you said, and I agree. I thought about that too, that he is like a military role, which that's why I think in the first one didn't bother me at all. The first one, I thought it's just fine. In the first one, we also see him without CGI, and I thought even that was fine. So I think in this one, even considering, you know, again, that he is this military guy, but now he's how many years removed from the military for one. Now he also has a family. And so I think it was now seeing him in this atmosphere with all these other dynamics where it seemed to me like it called for, again, more emotion. That, again, that could be a very good reason. To me, it's still a knock on the film and the performance. Now, we could also say that the CGI got in the way, right? So while maybe there was some more emotion that just didn't come through because of the CGI, I don't think that's a very strong argument, because I think Zoe Saldana gets a lot of emotion across in her performance. I think we see, again, if you want to look at Andy Serkis and some of his roles, including King Kong, I think he gets conveys a lot of emotion through that. But I know, for example, with a movie like The Lion King, which was excellent CGI, but that was one of the knocks on it, right? That maybe because it was animals or the CGI or whatever, sometimes it was hard to kind of feel or sense or detect some of that emotion behind the performance. Yeah. So I don't think we'll be able to nail down what it was. But for me, that was at least, and I think more than even any of the other actors. So again, that's why I don't think it's legitimate to kind of say, well, it was the CGI or whatever. Again, I think, I think the fault either lies with the direction. Maybe I'm just not fully connected with that character and exactly. I mean, I would say that's a fault in the writing as well, though. Yeah. I think any time with a role like this, like we said, it's not that deep. It's not that profound. So there shouldn't be any mystery or ambiguity as far as to who this character is, what his motives are, what his intentions are, what his background is, why he reacts this way, why he thinks this way. That should all be pretty straightforward. It's not. So the fact that there's still a sense, you know, from observing that character and that role and that portrayal and kind of feeling like, Maybe it was an A, you know, or an A minus, but it kind of feels like it could have been an A plus plus, you know? And I think that would have, I think that it could have even, for a movie like this, as long as it was as pretty as it was, with sort of a pretty straightforward plot as it was, I think it actually a bigger, you know, or a, just a more sort of accomplished performance would have actually added a lot more in that sense.
And I was thinking what you said about the CGI. I don't think the CGI, because I don't know what you thought about it, but Sigourney Weaver playing that kid, I thought was very emotional. Like, I think she conveyed a lot more emotion than the Jake Sully character.
Yeah.
Because Sigourney Weaver was playing a 14-year-old, and I did like a lot more emotion was... What happened?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. She played her own daughter, the one that she got the super... Daughter,
yeah.
Yeah. And that was Sigourney Weaver doing that performance. Mm-hmm. And I think it came across like really good, like emotional, like even her expressions and everything.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't blame the CGI, but again, I think you're right about the writing, where it was more simplistic than it was any giving much to push on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of pretty much, I mean, my take on it, right there. I don't have,
So let me ask you a question. Is any part of you intrigued to see where they go next in the story? Like to see more parts of Pandora?
I mean, I do feel a sense of curiosity, but along with that curiosity, I kind of feel a sense of like, man, what a shame, you know, that it's almost like, you know, on one hand, you have this incredible access and ability. And you know, James Cameron, regardless of what you think about him or any of his other movies, it's pretty undeniable that whether it's his vision or his leadership or his creativity, he is able to get, you know, artists and individuals. He's able to get, you know, at least the production team able to get incredible things out of them. Even looking at Titanic, right? And some of the things that he was able to do there. And I think it's probably a combination of those things, right? I mean, his aptitude for filmmaking, his creativity, his vision, his leadership. It's probably a combination of all those things. So for me, to have all of that and the ability to create something as visually stunning as this movie is, but then, you know, to... for me to not be able to match the level of that with a story and with writing, to me, it's a shame. And I won't forget that moving forward. So while there'll be a curiosity for, you know, like you said, what other worlds are going to be explored? Are there going to be, you know, lava people? Are there going to be, you know, crazy desert things?
Desert people.
Yeah. And I might even go to the theater to watch it just to compare the experience. But it wouldn't change my expectation of it still. What will really blow me away is if, you know, you continue to push the envelope visually, but then, you know, you like hire some other writers or something to just really, you know, create something that is a really sort of significant, meaningful, impactful piece of drama.
Right.
Because that being said, I do not think that this should have been nominated for Best Picture. Best Visual Effects, hands down. Best Picture, I don't think so.
I can see that. You know what I mean? And it's really funny because usually these pictures that are CGI spectacles and make tons of money don't get nominated.
Right.
So it is funny that it did get nominated over RRR, which I still believe was robbed.
What's funny to you is shocking and appalling to me.
But while we were talking about, like, yeah, it'll be nice exploring the other parts of the world, it came to my mind, like, why don't the humans just land on a different part of this moon and just get what they want?
Yeah. That should be that should be the teaser for the next one. What if the humans landed on the other pole?
Because in my head, I was like, oh, what if they do go to the desert? And then they show up, they're like, oh, look, the desert people. I'm like, oh, man, humans have been here for like 20 years now.
Yeah.
And we just didn't know about it. So I didn't find, like, I thought about that just now.
Well, what's intriguing about it is that, again, if we're talking about this pushing the envelope, we could say that this came out at the end of 2022, and compared to everything else, the visuals are like in 2024, let's say. I mean, it's that far of a leap from everything else. So, is it in production now?
Well, and the funny part was this film was made like 2 to 3 years ago. You know what I mean?
Exactly, right?
Like, so three's in the can. Like, they're just, I think they were just polishing up effects, but that's already been filmed because they had to film that because it has to take place so the kid's not aging, like, especially the spider kid. I do know 4 and 5 is going to be another time leap.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Now, we've definitely thrown a lot of flowers at this visually, but I do believe that there is a movie out there in theaters right now that I haven't seen. I don't think you've seen it either, but without having seen it yet, and it's different because it's animated, maybe it's somewhat different, but it could be a movie that rivals Avatar visually, but I also, without seeing it, will venture to say that the story will be significantly better than Avatar 2 without having seen it. And now there's stories and reports out there about terrible and horrific working conditions to have created those visuals. That's a whole other story for another time and place. But based on the evidence, which is into the Spider-Verse, I don't think it's that far out of the realm of possibility to say that Across the Spider-Verse could rival Avatar 2's visuals.
It could, but like, different, I think rival it, but like differently. Because like you said, these looked real. I don't expect anything I do expect some stuff in Across the Spider-Verse to look real, but it's more stylized.
Mm-hmm.
But how I think you said it before when we saw the trailer for like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like what they did with the first movie and probably what they do with this is having so much impact on animation altogether.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Those stylistic choices, just like Avatar had so much impact on the way we saw special effects, and this one too, like will have an impact on how we see special effects going forward. Like, I think that's what Across the Spider-Verse will do. Like, it'll say, hey, you can convey emotion, you can be funny, you can be serious, you can be for kids and adults and not, you know, it's sort of like what we used to see Pixar as, is what I think the Into the Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse has taken that spot in animation now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, different. The other question, you know, that I have, especially as we're talking about visual films pushing the envelope, is how realistic is going to be enough? You know, at one point, can something be more high definition than just my eyesight? Like, is my eyesight the best definition there is? Or are you telling me there's something better than that? Or and is at some point, is what I'm seeing on the screen just gonna look like what I'm seeing every day? And that's not that fun. I'm seeing that already.
Well, the problem with it is if there is better than your eyesight, it'll be wasted because your eyesight will translate it to your eyesight.
I need a prescription. Although I have perfect eyesight.
If your eyes are 4K and they come out with 8K, well, you're still going to see it in 4K because that's all you can perceive.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But it's the same thing as with video games when people are like, oh, get the PS5 or whatever. It looks more realistic. Like in Gran Turismo, the grass looks like more like real grass. I'm like, I don't care.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's at one point you're like, I just want it not to look like horrible. Uh-huh. And that's it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, so ultimately the goal is not it's not to, you know, get it to the point where it's so realistic that you just can't distinguish between real life. Although that's probably the case with virtual reality. But ultimately it's to make it so good that you won't be able to focus again on the things that don't look authentic, which is, you know, back to a point that we made on the last episode about what Chris Nolan said about CGI, which is that when your eye, it's a distraction in the sense that when you can detect it, it takes you out of the immersion of the story. So Avatar 2 definitely didn't do that, you know, so it achieved its goal. I think in that sense, and not only is it beautiful, but it's also immersive enough that were it not so dull and boring, you would just get swept away kind of into this world.
But people did, because I don't know if you heard about after the first one came out. I didn't hear so much with this one, but after the first one came out, people had I forgot what they called it, but they had issues with depression because they couldn't live on Pandora for real. it was
I did, yeah. I forgot I what they remember called hearing it. That, yeah.
Like, and people were actually getting treated for this as it was a real, like, mental illness.
I better not comment on that. But that's, yeah. So, by the way, have you been to Pandora?
Oh, Animal Kingdom, yes.
Yeah. It's good?
It is. Have you been or no?
No. I've never been to Animal Kingdom.
Oh, man. It is. There was a ride there where it simulates riding like the Banshee in the air. It's probably the greatest ride I've ever ridden in my life. Like, okay. I was next to my nephew. My girls were down. Like, we were riding it, and I remember just, like, putting my arms out. And it's almost like Back to the Future, where it's a big screen and you're moving, but you do feel like you're flying through the air, and there's like, it feels like water splashing in your face. Uh-huh. And something that they said, like the whales that appear in this appear in that scene. Uh-huh. You go by the water and stuff, which is really cool. It shows how advanced thinking he was about the whales. But like, you just want to ride that ride again and again. It just feels phenomenal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's good. I got to check that out. Do they have any food from Pandora in Pandora?
No.
Oh, okay.
You can buy a hot dog. But they're.
Does it look like the tails of the Na'vi?
No.
Like the.
I wish they had all that. They just had a regular food area. Uh-huh. But I think they're expanding the area too. The gift shop was really cool too, because like just the walkway and everything, because it's always a long line. Like, that looks amazing. Like, you're going through Pandora. The gift shop is like, the whole area is, they have a floating island right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That you walk under and all that.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun when you move down here. Well,
Yeah, I definitely got to check that out. I also heard good things about the new Tron roller coaster. You ride that?
Okay. No, cause it wasn't, we went like a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now, to Disney, but it was still working. Like, they were working on that thing for like 5-7 years.
Yeah.
So
I
I haven't
heard
been
it's
on air.
very I heard it's really good, but I heard it's very short. People were
Well, I heard it's
complaining.
very short because it's very fast.
Right.
As I think if most roller coasters go 30 miles an hour, this goes 60 miles an hour.
Most roller coasters go 30 miles an hour.
No, I'm saying if. I'm like, it's.
Oh.
I forget exactly what it is. It this goes double the speed of a normal roller coaster.
Yeah. And Harry Potter ride is supposed to be good too.
Hagrid one, or
Yeah.
I didn't
Yeah.
go with Ava because she was scared because she heard there was a drop, but then she went
Uh-huh.
with her aunt the next time and said it was great. But they have other rides. Oh, you've never been to a Harry Potter land, right?
I have, yeah. I've been on some of the other rides, just not that Hagrid
Oh, because there was one we rode that was like four sit next to each other,
one.
and I thought that was a phenomenal ride. Like we were
There was
flying through the
one
air.
where like in the line to it, you are in like this some type of like an office or like a big room. I know that Dobby character was in there somewhere. I don't remember it. It was a long
Cool.
time ago.
It might have been that. It might have been the journey one.
Yeah.
But like I said, it was really fun. Like the whole area looks like you're in a whole different world.
Yeah. Okay. Well, lots still to come from Mr. Cameron and the Navi and the world of Pandora. Let's before we move into our ratings, as we close our discussion on Avatar: The Way of Water, let me give you a few fun facts.
Fun facts with Juan.
So, kind of my fault here to I kind of forgot to look up to compile some fun facts. So I'm just digging some up here now. Some of these you may have already heard or had some knowledge of. But according to James Cameron, Kate Winslet performed all of her underwater stunts herself. Apparently, she has a personal vendetta against Tom Cruise and broke his underwater filming record from Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation, which was 6 minutes. Hers was 7 minutes and 14 seconds.
Yeah, I
That's
think she
long.
even called him out afterwards. She was like, "Beat that,
Yeah.
Tom." It
Yeah.
was a good one.
Another one.
Let's see. James Cameron had a cameo in the movie when
Oh.
Quaritch first wakes up. He is the voice on the ship that says, "Stand by, 2 minutes to Pandora insertion, secure for Delta 5."
Okay, see, that is a fun fact. I didn't know that.
There you go.
Another one.
That's it. Yeah, that's
Okay.
it. Sorry about that. I forgot about that. So I'll have better and more fun facts for the next film.
You forgot about your crowning segment.
Maybe I'll even do fun facts for Avatar in our next episode. I've done that before where I've kind of reverted back.
Nice. You
But,
know what? You should do that. Fun facts should be on the next episode so they could hear. That's how we start off every episode. Fun facts for the last episode.
Not a bad idea. Not your worst idea.
Right. Thank you.
All right. So now that we've had that, I will go into my rating for the film. I'm gonna come up with lyrics to these little tunes that I'm gonna sing or rap over these interludes.
You gonna drop some bars?
Yeah. So, for me, yeah, gave us some good discussion topics. It was very long. Again, I don't know what else to say except, yeah, visually remarkable. But story pretty flat, boring, dull at times. Again, too long, too self-absorbed. I feel like we talk a lot and make a big deal out of run times. I'm fine with any run time, but it has to be a good movie. It has to still be entertaining, engaging, dramatic. If it's dull and it's boring and it's flat, then it's going to feel like 5 hours and people are going to fall asleep and you're going to lose people. So that's what I felt this one did for me. I definitely still think your point is valid, as we've mentioned before with other movies. Sometimes the actual theatrical movie going experience is more significant than we realize. Still waiting for that written piece that you have coming about the cinematic experience. So be on the lookout for that. Hopefully that'll come out before the next Avatar comes out in 2025.
It'll be here soon.
You'll have to check out the website for that. But again, like the, you know, it's actually a pretty, I think it's less, I think I was younger and I was much more taken aback by the first one. But it still wasn't enough to get me to go back and see it again. And I never have seen the first one again, like sat down and watched it from beginning to end. I've caught tiny fragments of it. Same thing with this one. I don't see myself going back to watch this again. But I probably will check out the third one. And maybe I'll even go see it in the theater to see if it's a better experience. But at this point, for Avatar, The Way of Water, I'm siding a little bit more with the critics, although 72%, 76%, I seems a little high to me. For me, it's a 2 out of 5 on our Little Jerry's rating scale. 2 out of 5.
Okay, that's fair. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. Coming up with my grade, the 1 out of 5 scale, it's hard because I've seen it now both in theaters and at home. And if we were just voting, if we were just ranking it on the theater experience, it's a 5 out of 5. The home experience is a 3 out of 3. I would recommend for people to see it. I'm like, hey, you should check it out. Maybe they'll like it at home. But ultimately, like, if I split the difference, I would give it a 4 out of 5. I'm like, I would recommend it to people. I might be also biased because I did see it with my kids, and I'm a sucker for seeing things with my kids. And looking at them and seeing them watch this movie in awe was something I'm not going to forget. I mean, we saw it on a Saturday morning. There weren't many people in there because it was like the matinee. And we, you know, we did the 3D, we did all that. And it didn't lag at all in the theaters. Again, I don't know if watching it at home, because I was struggling to stay awake when we saw it at home. But again, I was watching it in bed. I was more relaxed. It was after a long day of doing stuff. That, you know, that could also contribute to me. Or it could have just been, like you said, maybe it was not as good of a story. And that was putting me to sleep because it wasn't capturing me because I didn't have the spectacle anymore.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, so I'll land on a 4 out of 5 Little Jerry's for me.
About your movie going experience that you had with this, big crowd?
Well, no, because like full we theater? Literally, no, because we saw a matinee on Saturday because it was cheaper tickets.
Uh-huh.
And since I had to pay for all of us and it was 3D, like I think the tickets itself was like $90-something.
Uh-huh.
And then the food. So it's the most I've ever spent to go see a movie.
Uh-huh.
So we saw it. So there was some people there, but it was, I think it was like 11 o'clock on a Saturday.
Uh-huh. Okay. No, I was just curious if like watching it with a room full of other people taking that experience in for the first time also had an effect.
Yeah, like, I want to believe there were just, like, it was like a spattering of people. Like, we had almost the whole theater to ourselves.
Are you a fan of 3D?
When it's done well, and by that, I mean when it's the higher frame rate. Like, the first Avatar did, I think the Hobbits did it. It doesn't hurt my eyes, because when I watch regular 3D, it, like, the frame rate starts hurting my eyes, so it sucks. Like, I start getting, like, eye strain towards the end. But when it's done well, and to add, like, what Avatar does, it doesn't pop things out at you. It just creates depth in the world. And that's exactly what's great for Avatar. I remember seeing Beauty and the Beast when it was re-released in 3D, the animated one. And that was phenomenal, because when it wasn't made to pop out, like, when Belle's going through the castle, like, you see so much depth in the movie. I mean, not so much Finding Nemo, because it is 3D animated, so it didn't actually create as much depth that I thought it was going to. But, like, when it does create, like, a world that you feel like you're peeking into a window, I think it's great.
Okay.
So, as long as we don't get the cheesy, I stab at you. I'm like, ooh.
So if you were maybe recommending a movie to someone for them to, you know, kind of get to experience 3D done well, would it be Avatar, or do you have, or did there be another one at the top of your list?
No, it would be Avatar, especially Way of the Water. But even the first one, like, those are, like, peak, you know, 3Ds. Because even though, like, the first one, I think, did have a little bit that came at you, it's even when they're walking through the grass, you just see, like, levels, and they're just walking through. And it looks like a live-action diorama, like, where people are just walking through, and you're looking through a box. But, and, man, if you would have seen those whales in, like, the 3D and everything, it would have been nice.
Okay. All right. You're selling me a little bit.
Like I said, we'll all go see part three. The Fan of the Flame or something. I don't know what it's called.
Okay. Sounds good. This was good. Good discussion. So that was a 2 out of 5 for me, and a 4 out of 5 for Kevin, with a good discussion about the difference between the cinematic experience, the movie going experience, versus the at home on your couch experience. And they are different. And I think we've kind of illustrated that well. But yeah, this was fun. Thank you, Kevin, as always. We miss you, Mark, and everyone else listening. Thank you for joining us. We will be back soon. Kevin's choice. So that we'll see. We'll see what he hits. what that ends up being. But happy to be here. We'll return. Kevin, anything you want to say?
Love you guys. Keep listening. Keep suggesting. And you know what? Just keep watching movies, people.
And keep on rocking in the free world. Later, haters.